Support for NPR podcasts comes from Acura, featuring the Acura TL with DVD audio, satellite radio, and MP3 capability. Learn more at Acura.com.
This podcast is a production of KCRW.com.
From KCRW in Santa Monica, I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner, and this is The Business.
So you still want to do the show business, and you think that you got what it takes? I mean, you really got to rap and be all that. Prepare yourself for the breaks. Check it out.
This week on our program, the billion-dollar business that will no longer be ignored. We look at the burgeoning video game industry. Plus, we revisit our conversation with the Swifty Lazar of kids agents, with horror stories of mafia moms, Clearasil emergencies, and casting for the role of the chubby kid. You're listening to The Business from NPR. Perhaps it's the heat of August, but things are looking a little bizarre in Hollywoodland. For instance, it seems that the creator of the comic book Spawn and the writer of A History of Violence are going to give new meaning to the phrase over the rainbow. Warner Brothers has owned the rights to the original Wizard of Oz ever since it acquired Ted Turner's library of MGM films in 1986. Now they've acquired the rights to the book Oz, a revisionist take on the L. Frank Baum books that inspired the classic film. Todd McFarlane, who created the comic book character Spawn, told Variety, quote, "You've still got Dorothy trapped in an odd place, but she's much closer to Ripley from Alien than a helpless singing girl. We're bracing ourselves for the scene where, after a seeming bout of intense indigestion, a flying monkey bursts out of Glinda's chest cavity in a shower of viscera." Meanwhile, NBC is reviving the cheesy athletic competition American Gladiators as a mid-season replacement. This would be troubling enough given the worldwide spandex and body oil shortage. But it also shines a spotlight on NBC's new co-chairman, Ben Silverman, and his potential conflict of interest. The production company founded by Silverman, which produces NBC hits like The Office and The Biggest Loser, is also the producer of the new American Gladiators. Silverman's put his stake in his former production company, Reveille, in a sort of blind trust, wherein the company is not supposed to profit from decisions he makes as an NBC executive. Silverman gets to keep the money from existing shows like The Office, but gets nothing from shows that Reveille places on NBC's schedule in the future. But as Kim Masters pointedly asked in Slate last month, when does the future begin? NBC, for its part, insists their interest in Gladiators predated Silverman's arrival as chairman. Looking abroad, Spanish public television network TVE has decided to stop airing live bullfights. The move was made after parents objected to gory scenes that frightened children, and after several bulls complained of being slaughtered barbarically in front of cheering throngs of bloodthirsty hooligans. In a compromise, TVE will show taped highlights to audiences in late night, and Spain's bulls have agreed to walk briskly, but not run, through the streets of Pamplona. Finally, speaking of running, the presidential race is making for some strange bedfellows, at least online. For the first time, Viacom's MTV and News Corporation's MySpace are partnering for a series of one-on-one, real-time dialogues between the leading candidates and college kids. The Q&As will be streamed live on MTV.com and MySpace and aired on MTV. The first virtual town hall is set for September 27th with the former Democratic senator from North Carolina, John Edwards. Viacom and News Corporation both promise that only one-third of the questions will have to do with Edwards' choice of styling mousse, while another third will focus on his choice of undergarments. The final third will focus on the role of Islamofascism in America's quest for global hegemony. And that's the Hollywood News Caravan. Coming up later in the show, just because you don't play video games doesn't mean you can ignore them. But next, a conversation with the agent to the underage stars. Earlier in the year, we spoke with Bonnie Leitke, an agent who's made a long and successful career out of discovering and representing young talent. She's one of those rare folks willing to haunt junior high school plays looking for fresh new faces, and one of the few agents up on the ins and outs of the specialized labor laws that apply to kid stars. Now, there have always been child stars, but in the last couple of years, the kid biz has really taken off, especially for Disney. Their TV shows like The Sweet Life of Zack and Cody, That's So Raven, and especially Hannah Montana have become huge. And their high school musical franchise of movies, TV, stage shows, and merchandise is just a money-making machine. So it's no coincidence that the venerable William Morris Agency snapped up kid agent Bonnie Leitke and her partner Thor Bradwell to create their new tween division. To commemorate her assimilation into the House of Morris, we thought we'd revisit our conversation with the Swifty Lazar of kids agents. It's a conversation that inevitably turned to stage moms. Bonnie Leitke says that no matter what their reputation is, the reality can be worse.
A mom will actually think that sexual advances towards the director will get the job for the daughter, and it's made the director feel uncomfortable and have lost the job and have had to pull them off. You know, it's not only just the moms, it's fathers too. I mean, I remember having a father in particular who's now since come around, interesting enough, and he was one of the meanest fathers I'd ever dealt with, and he was abusive to everybody from the director to the producer. At one point, they had made him where he'd have to stay in the dressing room, but then finally they did say he had to leave altogether.
How do you negotiate that? I mean, is the child the client? Or is it the child and the parents who are the client?
I mean, it comes down to both. I mean, it's a minor. They can't just drive themselves to a set. You know, mom or dad has to be there. I mean, you do end up with two people on that set, like it or not.
In the spring, hundreds, maybe thousands of kids and their moms, and sometimes the whole family, descend upon L.A. for TV pilot season. A lot of them end up staying at the Oakwood corporate apartments in the San Fernando Valley. Not only are the Oakwood apartments located near the Universal, Warner Brothers, and Disney studios, they're completely furnished. They even offer professional studio tutoring services, acting classes, and a bazaar of other support services like headshots and diction tapes. But kids agent Bonnie Leitke says that having all those mini thespians and their stage moms packed together makes for what she calls a breeding ground for evilness.
Our biggest complaint up there would be what we call the mafia moms. The mafia moms are the worst of their kind. They are the moms that sabotage the newbies. They are the ones that go for the jugular.
Oh, stop it.
Oh, yeah. They're the ones that basically sit out by the swimming pool or the jacuzzi. And I come in from Iowa. It's my first pilot season in town. Perhaps I've saved all year long to bring my little Max for pilot season, and, you know, I let them know that Max has an audition for the middles, and he's so excited that he's going in on this pilot for NBC tomorrow. Well, they gang up on me, and they tell, first off, they go for little Max, and they tell little Max, well, Max, you're too skinny, you're too chubby, you're too blonde, you're too blue. You know, my son's already going to see the producers. He's been our friend forever. We went skiing with them last week. They told us they wrote the part for him. Why do you think you have a shot at this? So that's what they've done to the little boy. Then they come after the mom, and then they sabotage the entire situation with that. Well, you know, we have every in on that role. Why would you even bother going in on that? This is the biggest waste of time. You know, they literally have come up with every line in the book to sabotage you going on that audition. And they have completely screwed and messed with your mind so much that by the time you're trying to go to sleep that evening prior to the audition, you're just a mess. I mean, you need a Valium or a Xanax at that point to just calm down.
And nine-year-old Max is having his first Valium.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, I'm, as the agent, trying to talk them out of the tree at this point, and it's almost useless. I mean, for the people who've been here and who are seasoned, 3 years, it's different. They get it. You know, they understand it. And at least they're savvy enough to say, you know, we go to the movies, we go to City Walk, we stay away from these idiots. But the ones who are brand new, they think that they're actually befriending and maybe they're getting some information that they can use. And you've got your extra mean mommies that are just so evil. Sadly enough, managers go up there too and do the same thing.
Every couple years, we hear about an underage star in a fight with their parents over their finances or their freedom. A few years ago, for instance, Nickelodeon star Amanda Bynes threw a fit, like only a 16-year-old can, saying her parents were treating her like, totally like a child. But unlike the average petulant teen, Bynes could afford to hire a lawyer, and soon served her parents with court papers seeking emancipation, which was ultimately denied. While Bynes ultimately reconciled with her parents, Mom and Dad fired all of her agents, managers, and lawyers for not warning them. Less newsworthy but more common, emancipation is simply a business decision to skirt the labor laws that apply to child actors. Minors can only work a certain number of hours a day and no later than 12:30 in the morning. And they have to be accompanied by a legal guardian and a studio teacher on set at all times.
I usually recommend that they don't emancipate. Many have done it. Regardless of what my feelings were on it, usually in that situation, the parents actually are asking to do it. I don't know. I see it go bad. I mean, I have seen it go bad.
What happens?
Well, you have to have a standalone situation. I mean, they believe that emancipation, that you can go and have your own home, pay your own bills, and be self-sufficient. At 15, I mean, I don't buy it.
Does the business apply pressure to young actors who have found success to emancipate, to say, look, you don't need to go to school, you don't need to have a certain amount of hours? Is that pressure intense?
Yes. They would prefer to hire an emancipated child. So yes, the pressure is huge.
The issue of weight is just as problematic for kids as it is for grown-up actors, only even more gross. Kids are constantly being warned to watch their weight, even if you and I would describe them as skinny. Except, of course, if you've got the look for a specialty role.
I do send the overweight children out for the overweight roles. Yes, we do.
Hold on. You're blowing my mind here.
Oh, yes.
So there are overweight roles.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
So there's a business in fat.
Oh,
you
got to
tell me all about this. I want to know everything.
100%.
Explain.
I probably could find you roles on Breakdowns right now and show you character descriptions that are called the chubby girl or the overweight girl.
And kids are...
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Okay,
if you go on IMDb right now, I'm actually thinking of a particular client I have that I actually pulled up yesterday just to look at what was listed on her IMDb page. And she had, I want to say it was Chubby Girl. And I thought, how odd that they didn't end up giving her a character name, Judy or Susie or something. And granted, she's not even that chubby. She's 5 pounds, maybe. I wouldn't even call her chubby in my eyes. And they listed her as the chubby girl.
Bonnie Leitke has dealt with every kind of issue for her kids and their crazy stage parents. From an adult actor hitting on her teen client to figuring out deals with the big agencies when her clients get big. Leitke is already sharing One Tree Hill star Chad Michael Murray with the giant creative artist agency. And she just delivered CAA another big client, High School Musical star Zac Efron. But the biggest problem she and her clients face is not their deal points. Rather, puberty.
You know, the typical, I've got girls who bind themselves with the breasts, they, you know, always trying to make sure that it looks like, you know, they're flat. And, you know, I mean, everything from acne, I'm constantly dealing with that. You know, I've deals with many different local places who will help out when, you know, crunch time comes, when I'm trying to help out with a lot of my young actors with acne. And
I need an emergency Calprap.
Emergency. I'm talking this after, like, you know, in the afternoon. Can
we
they come over?
We need to diffuse.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. This is it.
Oh, yeah.
It can blow the
oh,
whole energy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's probably my biggest thing is acne, I would say. I have lots of clothing companies call up and offer, you know, clothing and stuff. That's not – it's the acne.
If you offer – Clearasil.
That's it.
We've got something to talk about.
That is really the big priority, especially a lot of the actors who come off sets and, you know, leaving with all the makeup on. I mean, oh, the young men, oh, they have such a struggle with it.
That's Bonnie Leitke, the CEO of Leitke Bradwell & Associates and one of the biggest names representing little actors. For all her run-ins with crazy stage moms and dads, she still has a lot of sympathy for the parents of kid actors. Whatever their motivation, they basically have to give up their own lives to support their kids' careers. Take, for instance, Kay Hand. She's the banker, the teacher, the driver, and the cheerleading squad for her 14-year-old daughter, singer, comedian, and actress, Ashley Ann Michaels. They came to L.A. saying they'd give it 2 years. 2 years ago. Luckily, Ashley's just landed her first real role, the lead in the indie film Tween. Here, she interrogates her mom's new dentist boyfriend.
So you guys having sex yet?
Mari, enough.
It's pretty easy, you know. I mean, if you haven't gotten it yet, it's probably because you're gay. Are you gay, Francis?
Mara, you may be excused.
I didn't ask to be excused. So, Francis, I saw the show about a dentist who felt up his patients while they were under anesthesia. Have you ever done that?
Kay Hand, welcome to the business.
Thank you.
Talk a little bit, if you would, just how you became a stage mom.
Well, my daughter was 7 at the time and went to the state fair with another family, and someone had a booth saying, how would you like to be on a Nickelodeon or Disney commercial? The parent who had taken her to the fair signed her up. She didn't end up getting a commercial, but it did start her on the path of taking acting lessons, voice lessons, which I knew she wanted to do for a couple years already.
Even before the state fair.
She had been doing theater in her elementary school.
So this begins to coalesce into the sort of thing where you think, we're going to have to leave. We should point out Nevada is your home right now.
Reno.
And make a few jaunts to sunny California. Tell me about how you made that decision.
She started taking acting lessons, and the owner of the establishment said, well, we do have people from Los Angeles, agents, managers, come here looking for talent. Within a month, there were people wanting to represent her. At that point, she had just turned 8, and we started making trips driving from Reno to Los Angeles for our 5-minute audition and then come back home.
How long a drive is that?
8 hours.
Walk us through the process by which you decide you're going to move to Los Angeles.
Well, what happened was after 4 years of driving back and forth, I got a couple times we got stuck in some pretty treacherous weather going over the summit, Donner Summit. And at that point, I looked at her and I said, we're either moving to L.A. or you're getting out of the business, because I've been white knuckling the steering wheel for, 3 hours and I can't even see the road. And, now we're down here on our own.
So let's talk about those first meetings out here. Did you already have an agent, or were you here to find one?
We have had a couple agents already, and I think it was very difficult to represent someone who's in Reno. You know, they don't really want to bring you down unless it's really big. And then it's frustrating for us because I as a parent, you have to be available. It's sort of like being on call.
And then even then, it's a 5-minute. Thanks.
If that.
We'll call you.
Right.
Did you come here thinking one thing and discover another? Was it, are you shocked at the amount of nepotism, let's say, or,
Shocked, no. but I do understand, how great that is. I guess I didn't really think it would take this long before she would land something. Only because we had been encouraged by a lot of casting directors to come down here. Where she was taking acting lessons in Reno, she would always get a call back from every casting director that came through and said, we love this kid. You need to be in L.A.
Let's talk about you in all this. Okay. You're a single parent now.
Mm-hmm.
Any parent, of course, wants their kid to succeed, wants their kid to be happy. There's a certain amount of sacrifice that goes into being a parent. But for a stage mom, it's so much more than that. You have to sort of subsume your desires and your social life, too, I would think. I mean, it's sort of hard to date if you're constantly, bailing out at the last second to run over to Warner Brothers or to, go to a casting session for a Burger King commercial or whatever it is. How do you cope with it, and how are you doing with it?
Well, it's important to surround yourself with good people. Ashley has a very good relationship with her managers, and they have kids. So sometimes she'll hang out with them, which frees me up for a couple hours. I don't have a partner, but I would need to have a very considerate one who is really open to this type of lifestyle. I don't even know if that's out there. But I look at everything in life is temporary. And at 14, I'm lucky if I get a couple more years where Ashley wants to hang out with me. And after that, she probably won't want to, be seen that much with me. But so I'm, enjoying the time I have.
Well, with any luck, we'll see her in a McDonald's commercial and hopefully on a red carpet soon after that. Kay Hand, mother of Ashley Ann Michaels, age 14, eminently castable. Hint. Thanks for being on The Business.
Thank you.
Coming up next, video games cut their hair, grow up, and move out of the house. You're listening to The Business from NPR. You're listening to The Business, and I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner. The video game industry is big, billions big, and it's just getting bigger. According to industry figures, U.S. computer and video game software sales grew 6% last year to $7.4 billion with a B, almost tripling sales in the past decade. According to the film industry, domestic box office was about $9.5 billion. Now, box office is only a slice of the Hollywood pie, but the comparison makes a point. Gaming has become way too big to ignore. Yet, ignore it we often do, mostly because many of us are not hardcore gamers. But lots and lots of people are, and they're not the people you might think. Again, according to the gaming industry, the average game player is 33 years old, and 38% of them are women. So, we at the business vow to focus more on this burgeoning segment of the entertainment industry, and our first act is to bring in Ben Fritz, Variety's gaming guru. Ben Fritz, welcome back to the business.
Thank you.
Why don't we do more on video games, first of all? Give me a sense of why that is. Why are we so numbskulled about this industry? The us being, you know, me.
I think it's because video games are not fundamentally respected as an art form and as a media form. They're seen more as a diversion and as a toy. And therefore, you know, people don't take them seriously either as media or as business. You know, there's only a certain demographic that currently plays games, and while it's growing, there's nobody out there who says, I don't see movies. But a lot of people think they're not gamers, even if they've, you know, used to play in an arcade or occasionally play a game online on the web. They think of themselves, I'm not a gamer, I'm not part of that, I'm not interested in that.
Because there is such a certain hardcore demographic of right. gamers who, you know, every dollar goes into the new, whatever it is, Warhammer Online
yes.
or
That's Cry. Right. That's right. And there's not like an alienating core group of TV watchers who make everybody else feel uncomfortable watching TV. But obviously there is a core group of 18-year-olds who play Halo obsessively and I think do alienate other people who may be somewhat interested in games but don't want to spend all their waking hours playing them.
Like you.
No comment.
So when Halo 2 comes out and sells $125 million worth of games in one day,
mm-hmm.
clearly something is afoot here. It's
yes.
not just kids who are playing video games in the basement who are buying this, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So there has to be then a sort of casual gamer out there. And the video game business, and I guess now sleepy us,
mm-hmm.
are waking up to this fact.
Yeah, there's a broad group of people who play games. And I mean, the great thing for the industry is that the people who played games as kids are now in their 20s and 30s, and they're still playing. And they have a lot more disposable income than they did when they were 15. You know, so the demographic is only growing amongst the hardcore young men, not to mention we're now seeing a lot more middle-aged people and women playing on devices like the Nintendo Wii and Nintendo DS. So there's just a lot of growth. In the video game industry, there's a lot more growth than there is in movies and TV and other traditional parts of media.
So we should define our terms here a little bit. What is the casual games business as opposed to the hardcore gamers?
Generally, casual games are defined as games that you can easily pick up and start playing right away. You don't have to learn a lot. You don't have to devote hours and hours to figuring it out. So it's meant to be played casually for a few minutes here and there, whereas the sort of core games are ones that it probably takes a few hours just to learn how to do it, and it probably takes 20 or 30 hours to become really good at it.
Mm-hmm. And this new segment is supposed to be big bucks for the video game business.
Absolutely. So the video game industry is fast growing compared to other parts of media, and casual games are the fastest growing part of the video game business.
Now, video games seem to be adopting the movie business model, or the model seems to be maybe embracing them. Talk a little bit, if you will, about how Halo 3, which comes out in just
29 days, 13 hours, 2 minutes.
Which you're keeping assiduous track of.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about how this release is in some ways more like a movie than a video game.
Well, the video game industry, the more money that's involved, the more sophisticated their marketing gets. And if you want to look at an industry that knows how to turn the release of a product into an event, you know, movies are probably the film industry is the paragon example. So they're definitely looking at doing publicity and marketing partnerships to try to turn that opening weekend into an event, which is good for Microsoft, which makes Halo. It's good not just for Halo, but they think it's good for their overall business. The same way that we all keep track of when the film opens the box office, they want people to look at a video game opening, see huge numbers, and not just want to buy that game, but but be interested in the gaming business overall and hopefully become consumers.
So who's partnering with Microsoft on this mega release?
They have a bunch of partners. The one I can remember offhand that's the funniest maybe is Mountain Dew is a big marketing partner on Halo, and they're putting out a special edition of the Mountain Dew can with Master Chief, the main Halo character, on it, and they call it gaming fuel.
It has 30% more caffeine or something like that?
probably. I didn't know it was possible, but I'm sure it does, yeah.
Are we going to see advertising in video games?
You already do, and I think the video game business sees that as a big growth area. It's hard to raise the price of a game. They do it every once in a while, but there's a lot of resistance. So an easy way to make more money is to start introducing advertising.
So how do they do it? How do they insert the ads into the games?
One is to have the sponsor surround the download of content for the game. The other way is you can have – if you're playing a sports game – if you're going to have a natural-looking stadium, there'll be billboards in the stadium. And so instead of just making up companies, they figure, why not charge Pontiac or, Buick or whoever, Ford, and make them pay to have a real ad there. And then because most game consoles now are connected to the internet, you can update that ad as often as you want.
So as Taco Bell mm-hmm. introduces its new, gutbuster enchilada or whatever, yeah. the advertising will be dynamic. That is, it won't just always be the same ad in the video game. It'll be sort of constant and updated yeah. as I play.
Yeah, it absolutely will. And right now the game industry is kind of, I think, in an experimentation mode of figuring out what kind of advertising works best and how to get people involved. But without a doubt, in a few years, marketing will be all over games in various ways.
I want to ask you about sort of where this all fits into the larger portfolio of these mega conglomerates that own these game titles or these consoles. I mean, how important is gaming to the future of Sony Corporation, of Microsoft, of companies like that?
A Nintendo.
Yeah.
I think they're very important because, as I always say, if you're involved in media or technology at all, video games are one of the fastest growing areas because a lot more people are getting into gaming for the first time or starting to spend more money on it. For Sony, it's vital. Sony has dominated the industry for a long time, and now with the PlayStation 3, they're struggling for the first time. And if they were to lose that dominant position, it would be a huge impact on their bottom line, And Microsoft, for its part, has spent billions and billions of dollars to get into this industry, lost billions, and they need to start making it up. And for all of them, it's such a high barrier of entry. You have to spend so much to get in that once you're in, you really need to make sure that you stay in and make money, because if you have to retreat, you're going to have lost hundreds of millions or billions of dollars.
So Grand Theft Auto 4, like one of the biggest game franchises in the game business, has missed its release date. They just said in August now they're not going to make it for the holiday season. What's the effect of that?
It's a huge impact on Take-Two, which makes the game. They had to say that their revenue for the quarter ending October will be down by over $200 million based on just this one game. That's going to impact not just them but the whole industry. Sony's counting on people who buy GTA to also buy a PlayStation 3 to play it on. Microsoft want people to buy an Xbox 360 to play it on. So for Take-Two, Microsoft, and Sony, this all means less revenue for the year. And for makers of other games, it's this big opportunity. So Grand Theft Auto 4, along with Halo 3 and Madden 08, is expected to account by some studies for about one-third of all the games sold between now and the end of the year. So you take out one of those three, and it's bigger than even taking out Pirates of the Caribbean from the summer. I mean, it's a huge franchise, and it's going to have a gigantic impact on the company that makes it, on their financials, and the overall industry. You're going to actually see a noticeably lower revenue for the video game industry by the end of 2007.
Ben Fritz covers video games for Variety. He joined us at our studios in Santa Monica. Ben, thanks for being on The Business.
My pleasure.
And that's The Business. Matt Holzman produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. Our associate producer is Darby Maloney. You can listen to this or any past program online anytime at kcrw.com/thebusiness. You can also podcast the show on KCRW's site or through iTunes. Our email address is thebusiness@kcrw.org. The Business is produced by KCRW Santa Monica and distributed by National Public Radio. I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner. We'll see you next week on The Business.
KCRW offers more than 20 podcasts covering politics, news, music, arts, and culture. For more details, visit kcrw.com.